It's leadership at all levels. Now in its eighth year, with our host Gail Lowney-Olofsson, Director of Corporate Partnerships and Community Relations for the Newport International Boat Show, a division of Newport Restaurant Group, where her career has focused on building decades of corporate partnerships through leadership, gratitude, and positivity. As an adjunct professor at the University of Rhode Island, Salve Regina University, and Western Connecticut State University, Gail appreciates the opportunity to share business acumen and optimistic views on life. She is the author of Yours Someday Is Now, What Are You Waiting For? 100% of the book's sales benefit nonprofit organizations, and to date, over $50,000 has been donated to nonprofit organizations. Hello, Gail.
Well, our last show of 2023, I should probably say our final show of 2023, is focused on corporate culture. Culture is a crucial, it's a strong part of our lives, but it is absolutely crucial on so many levels. And today, again, it's about corporate, it's about our work culture. So it influences our views, it influences our values. How about our trust, our loyalty, depending on how we feel about a company? It's so important to trust, and trust can be broken in 30 seconds. And culture can also be worrisome. It can create fears. You know, it changes based on the person, on the people, for positive or negative. And why is it so crucial? Because believe it or not, and I know this too well, as I approach my back nine in life of work, maybe my back three of three holes, not nine, that we are going to, the average person works 90,000 hours. That's 10.2 years. So 90,000 hours of our life are spent on in the workplace. So today we have an expert on corporate culture who is going to show us how culture also begins with your mindset. You could be in the worst job, the worst company, but it starts with you. You could be in the best company and be negative. So it starts with your mind. And today we welcome with very open arms, Al Curnow. I always say it, Al, is it Al Curnow? Al Curnow. And he's like, it's whatever it is, Al, I'll have you take it from there, the VP of CultureWise, to enlighten us. You're so good about your last name. How did you explain it to me?
So what I said, Gail, was you asked, is it Curnow or Curnow? And my answer was yes. And that's because even within our immediate family, it gets pronounced both ways all the time. Interestingly, from what I've been told, the correct pronunciation is Curnow.
Okay.
Yet I tend to use Curnow, particularly when I'm meeting somebody new, because phonetically it makes more sense, like the way it's spelled, C-U-R-N-O-W. People get it. But hey, as long as you call me, you can call me whatever you like.
Call me. Now, before we launch into CultureWise and learn all about it, I'm getting your bragging sheet out. You don't even know this. I don't think I remembered to tell you this. I've told everyone else, but not you. When you spoke at the University of Rhode Island, which is your alma mater, correct?
It is.
Yay, go Roadies, go Roadies. Let's go. Frame the question this way. Can you remember a time that you had a guest speaker in when you were a student that the whole class unanimously said, that was too short?
Although it was a while ago, I don't seem to recall that, Gail.
So you only came in for 45 minutes. That's all we had you. And when you had to leave, you had other commitments. The students all looked and said, that was too short. Like looking, okay, in my 25 years of speaking, I never heard that anything was too short. So it was a real lesson to me about how you were so concise. You were so engaged with them. You were so interested. Because you were so interested, you were interesting. So then I brought you to Western Connecticut State University, both of these via Zoom, by the way. Nobody wants to listen to a presentation on Zoom. And it was an hour and a half. And what was the reply? Don't brag, I'll brag for you. It was too short. And I'm like, okay, it was an hour and a half. What are we going to give Al the whole 3 hours? And yes, that's what you do. You go out for full days, hours, days. So culture-wise, let me turn the mic over to you.
Sure. So our firm, culture-wise, Gail, we're a bit unique in that what we do, all we do really is help organizations to develop great cultures. You know, we're not a true consulting firm. We're not a leadership development firm, although we have elements of it within our offering. Our really core and primary focus is helping leaders to establish great cultures. And currently, we're working with somewhere in the vicinity of about 900 organizations all around the world, which makes the work incredibly interesting and fascinating, right? Because, well, most of our clients are here in the United States. We have clients in Canada, in Mexico, in Europe, in London, where you'll be visiting here soon. We even have some clients in the Middle East, Mexico, and from every industry imaginable, from manufacturing to construction to law to accounting firms to schools. We even have one client that's a church, believe it or not. But the common denominator is that they're all led by really good leaders who, just as you do, Gail, they understand how important their culture is to everything they do. And so therefore, just want to make sure they're doing everything they can in terms of building best work site, workplace, work culture possible. And so that's kind of what we do. I work with these senior leaders and help them to do just that. And it's just, as you can imagine, it's fascinating work. I learn as much from our clients as they learn from me. But I love it. It's great work.
So in this capacity, you are amplifying. You're already amplifying a great company. How do companies that don't have great culture, how can you work with them?
Yeah.
Or do they not want you in?
So it's interesting, right? I spent a lot of time, especially in the first few years doing this work, trying to, number one, find those leaders who had horrible cultures, because I figured, you know what? They need help. I can help them, right? They need it the most. Yet what I found, and it took me a long time to realize this, was you're exactly right, Gail. They wouldn't hire me.
No, they won't.
Even though, right, we can make the case that, yes, if you improve your culture, you'll be able to hire better people. They'll perform better. You know, job satisfaction will be higher. The customer service experience will be greater. Even with all that, it didn't matter. They just either didn't get it or didn't care. And so you're right. The organizations and leaders I tend to work with are those that already get it. They just want to get better, if that makes sense.
Yes, like Newport Restaurant Group. I give it
like Newport Restaurant Group.
We need to get you into our company only Absolutely. To keep enhancing our culture, because we have a great culture.
Well, that's
and we're very lucky for that. So now if somebody is in a company with a poor leader, what do they do?
Absolutely. What I would say there, Gail, is, right, we can't necessarily change the leader or the leadership's thinking. They kind of are who they are. But what we can do as team members is maybe reframe the experience, right? How can we learn as much as we can and get as much as we can out of that experience, you know, while we're there?
Okay, so I'm going to tell you one secret. It's only between you and me, because no one else is listening.
Okay.
Okay. It's a joke. It's not really that funny. But my book, Your Someday Is Now, What Are You Waiting For? The Bad Leadership Examples are from my life experience. But I don't say that in the book. And I'm so grateful that I had them. And yes, even at Newport Restaurant Group, we've brought in bad managers. We've made bad hires. And so instead of getting upset about it, I'd reframe in my head and create my own world. So I love what you're saying. I would just create my own world based on our clients and based on the team I had the privilege to work with. So I like reframing. We're going to take a quick break and come back to strategies to reframe our mind as we go into 2024.
It is Leadership at All Levels, this time around with Gail Launia-Lofson. Gail?
And nobody starts a job thinking, oh yes, I'm going to go join this toxic company. But if it was all smoke and mirrors or leadership change and it's toxic, what are some strategies to reframe our mindset?
Absolutely. First, Gail, I think it starts with recognizing even in negative situations or the worst situations, there's always opportunities to learn, to grow, to get better. And even though it might be unpleasant, it might outright stink being in that muck, it's having that mindset, how can I learn, grow, and improve from this, right? Mm-hmm. The other thing I would say too is recognize that, you know what, doesn't necessarily mean this is permanent. Things can happen. Things can happen within the organization. Bosses can change. Our role can change. Maybe we move to another job or ultimately another company. But even still, how can we learn and grow and make the best of the situation we're in now? I love the language you use, Gail, in terms of, and I think that your mom might have encouraged. It's how do we create our new best reality within that situation.
Well, I remember when I first started years ago in a company and they didn't have any leadership training and I loved it. And one of our clients from Pepsi gave me the Dr. Stephen Covey tapes, 7 Habits of Successful People. Oh,
love it.
And I understand you have the first edition.
I do. I remember when the book came out, I was poking through a bookstore in Kansas City and it was a Saturday morning. And it was I think when Borders books still existed or one of those, and had my cup of coffee and I was just kind of thumbing through this book. And I said, gosh, this is kind of interesting. And it's never too far away from me, Gail. The principles and things he talks about in that book to me were life changing.
I was talking to a former student over the holiday, and he said, Gail, when you did the Covey training and you talked about loyalty to the absent, he said, I'm in a situation now where I really like my boss, but my boss, who is really smart and wonderful, talks bad about everyone in front of other people and even disparages people in front of other people. And that's so 1980s, like early 80s. So why does this still happen?
It does. It's funny because when you look at our process, when we work with organizations, we really try to focus on two things. One, we try to focus on, all right, what are the key core behaviors that we want our team members practicing and that we and leaders need to practice as well? And then the other part of our process, which maybe we can get to, is how do we reinforce that over time? But one of the behaviors that's common, I would say, across most of our client organizations, all 900 of them, is this one behavior that we call speak straight. And it means be willing to have those difficult conversations with our team members, number one. But number two, let's make sure we're doing it directly with them, right? Not with their other team members, not behind their back, right? Because anything other than having those difficult conversations directly with the person involved, in my mind, that's gossiping. That's damaging relationships. And to your question, why do we people continue? I don't know. I think it's one of those things that's just so much part of some of our DNA that it's almost difficult to even realize we're doing it. So I don't know why we do it, but it is commonplace. I know every organization I work with struggles with that. And particularly from a leadership standpoint, if a leader's doing it, man, is it doing damage. It's setting the wrong example. It's setting the wrong tone. It's damaging relationships. I wish I had the answer as to why it's done, but unfortunately it's far, far more common than one would hope.
Well, years ago, I was giving a presentation on leadership to a company. Oh, gosh, what was it at the time? I'm forgetting who she worked for then, but it was Cindy Zesk, who then became the vice president of marketing for AAA Northeast. Mm. She is brilliant. And she had hired me probably 15 years before that, became a big client of the Newport International Boat Show. But what she said, her rules were. When I called ahead of time, I said, can I talk to you about some of your department rules? Mm-hmm. She said, Gail, no gossip, period. No gossip, comma, period. Now, back then, 15, 20 years ago, I might have gossiped now and then. But what she taught me and continues to teach me, I consider her a really good coach and mentor, is that gossip assassinates. Yeah. It assassinates people's character. And Dr. Covey taught us this. When we are talking about other people, when they're not in the room, mm-hmm. it's loyalty to the absent. Mm-hmm. And I had a client whose young daughter, Rachel, used to say, Gail, when you point a finger, there's three pointing back at you. And at that time, I had never heard that. And I love teaching my students that too. Let's not point fingers. Let's curb our tongue. Hold your tongue.
Yeah. I love that, Gail. I love that. In fact, it reminds me of another behavior that's common across many of our clients. And it's one that we call practice blameless problem solving.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that great?
Practice blameless problem solving.
And here's what it's about. So let's say something goes wrong in your organization, in your company. Sometimes the initial reaction or response is to get angry, is to point a finger, is to blame someone who's not in the room, or maybe they are in the room.
Right.
That's a huge common human reaction. Well, what practicing blameless problem solving is all about is, instead of doing that, do three things anytime a problem occurs. First thing, let's fix the problem. Let's clean up the mess. Whatever went wrong, let's take care of it, right? Secondly, once we have a moment to catch our breath, rather than pointing fingers or blaming, let's take a step back and ask ourselves, why did that problem happen in the first place? Notice I'm not saying, whose fault is it? Who's to blame? Mm-hmm. Saying, okay, why did that occur? And then the third thing we do is we say, okay, how can we put a process in place to make sure that same problem doesn't occur again?
This is so productive.
Isn't it?
This method is so productive.
So productive. Takes the emotion out of it, and instead gets us to a point where, boom. And what I find, Gail, is the greatest organizations, the greatest companies, they don't have any fewer problems than any others. They just get really good at doing this. Problem occurs, they fix it, they clean it up, they figure out why it happened, put a process in place to make sure it doesn't happen again, and move on to the next.
So you just gave us an illustration of a good company getting better through this action step. What are some other action steps a good company that has great culture can have? What would it be? Remarkable, unparalleled culture.
Yeah, great.
How can a company get like that?
Well, great question. And again, in my experience, really, it starts with being incredibly intentional and thoughtful in terms of the type of culture you're looking to build. And this could be challenging, especially for organizations that are already really good. They might be of the mindset, well, we're pretty darn good as we are. But you know what? Every human being, every group of human beings can always get better. There's always another level we can continue to grow and get better at. So it starts with being really clear in determining, okay, what are the areas? What are those behaviors that, again, if we were practicing individually and as a team, would take us from where we are right now to where we want to be? But to me, the real secret in all of this is, once you've defined that, we need to make sure we have some kind of process in place to help reinforce those behaviors. Because what can happen is that, and in fact, it's great that we're at that time of year right now where January 1st is coming up.
Yes.
And a lot of us might be, what are a lot of us probably doing, Gail, is January 1st?
Setting our intentions, setting our resolutions. I like to call them intentions.
Absolutely. You know, where do we want to be better and improve? Yet sadly, and I don't know what the actual statistic is, but I've read that as high as 80 to 85% of us that make set intentions or make resolutions break them within a month. And so that, with that being human nature, again, in our experience, what we find is we need to have some structure or process in place to make those new habits stick, whether it be with a New Year's resolution or in improving our culture. And this isn't a new phenomenon. You know, Aristotle was talking about this thousands of years ago that, right, we we need to become something better or new or different. We need to practice and become, right, that new habit. We need to make it a habit. We need to make it like brushing our teeth, that we don't have to think about it. We just do it every day, twice a day. And same thing when it comes to our culture or our New Year's resolutions. We need to put a process in place to make those things habits, so we don't have to think about it. When a problem occurs, we just automatically practice blameless problem solving. We don't have to think about it, right? We do that by having a process that keeps those things in focus over and over and over and over over time.
No, I'm loving this. We need to become the new habit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we need to become it. You know, every time I speak with you or hear you speak, like to the class, I want you to be my coach every single day. Like, I want to wake up and call you. Well, it could be. You don't coach right now. Oh, you do. You coach in groups.
Coaching groups and senior leaders and teams and so forth. But
I know.
Frankly, that's one of the things I love about what I do, though, Gail, is that I'm all about, in fact, I think I've mentioned to you before, I've gone back and I'm getting an advanced degree in positive coaching and leadership.
Yes.
Because I love it so much. And what I really love, Gail, whether it's you on this call or any of our listeners or any of our clients, I love to help people get better and improve. And so, you know, that just drives everything that I do. So yeah, whether it's coaching or sharing an idea, yeah, I'm all about that.
Now, before we get to break, how did you get started in this business?
Yeah, great question. I'd like to say it was by design. It was entirely by accident. One of my former clients had an organization that was like none other that I've ever dealt with. One of those where you walk in the door and you feel the energy. And everyone was happy. They were productive. They were positive. And actually, the owner of that company sold his business, but then went on to write a book about building culture, how he did it in his own firm. And leaders from all over the country started contacting him. Come help us. So the next thing I know, he's calling me saying, hey, I think we have a business opportunity here to help a lot of organizations. And I jumped on board.
Okay. I never knew this about the book. So I need to find out, what is the name of that book for our listeners?
The name of that book, his first book was called Fundamentally Different. And his name, good friend of mine, is David Friedman, is the author. And his second book is How to Build a High-Performing Culture.
Do you work with each other now? He's part of CultureWise.
He started the firm. I was employee number 3.
Oh, yay. All right. Well, we'll go back to break and then continue our conversation with Al Curnow.
It is leadership at all levels this time around with Gail Lowney-Olofsson. Gail?
Talking one of my favorite subjects. Leadership. Al Curnow, I'd like to ask you, what are some of the challenges that even the best of the best companies are struggling with? Their roadblocks.
Yeah, I would say probably three of the most prevalent challenges all organizations are struggling with would be number one, recruiting good talent. Recruit continues to be, again, and even with the best organizations. The other thing we see quite frequently is once recruited, it's retaining top talent. You know, retention, turnover continues to be a common denominator. And then the third thing we see is, how do we leverage or get the most out of the talent we have? So performance-based, concerns. How do we motivate and really encourage the type of performance we're looking for? In other words, how do we help our team members to create the type of customer experience we want to be creating? I would say those pretty consistently tend to be the three challenges I see. Again, even great organizations continue to struggle with.
So let's take a look at retention. What are some retention strategies beyond money? Yes, of course, money retains to a point.
Yeah.
But what are some retention strategies that you've seen work?
Absolutely. I would say one of the biggest, and Gail, this is right in your wheelhouse, is effective leadership. Mm-hmm. I would say either way, either in terms of keeping or retaining a good employee or driving them out of the organization, is most heavily influenced by their immediate leaders or supervisors, right? There's that old saying that people don't leave jobs, they leave
people, right? Leave people.
Yeah. Right? People are, yeah, bosses or bad bosses. So I'd say that applies here too. So probably one of the most impactful things that a leader can do, an organization can do, is developing their leaders so that, yeah, they're taking great care of their team members. And I don't care of what type of compensation program, rewards program, how good your benefit package is. If the leaders aren't effective leaders, we're not going to keep our people, particularly our highest performers. It's that critical.
No, they are going to leave. So what does leadership mean to you?
Yeah, so leadership to me is someone who can guide, show the way, lead the way, set the right example. But to me, a leader, an effective leader, is one who demonstrates with 100% clarity that they're concerned about me. They're concerned about their team members. And to me, I think that's where it all has to start. A great leader is someone who takes the time and invests in the relationship, in developing the relationship with every single one of their team members, right? And who listens, who doesn't point fingers, right? Who practices blameless problem solving. To me, that's what a true leader is about. But Gail, I know you spend a lot of time in this particular space. I'd be interested in your thoughts in terms of what leadership means to you.
Are you tossing it back to me?
I kind of
toss
it back to you.
Okay. So I believe in leadership inspiration, when you can really inspire others. And I'll go to leadership in the classroom for a minute, or leadership with your clients, or leadership with your team, or just people that you affect. They may not work for you, but they work with you. Mm-hmm. And if we can look at people through that lens of what they can contribute versus what they lack, like each one of those students in the classroom, whether they're a C or an A, and I know you're the same way with this, I see possibility. I see possibility. Our son wrote me a Christmas card that I only got to the first paragraph and started crying, because I always say, for Christmas, for Mother's Day, for birthdays, just write me a card. Please don't give me a gift. He does both, but I don't even want the gift. I want the card. And he said, Mom, you love people so much. You love being interested in listening to people, and you see possibility in them they don't see in themselves yet. Al, I know that you're the same way when you're teaching. So the other thing with that is being a pull leader versus a push. And we've got great examples of that at Newport Restaurant Group. I always cite our president, Paulette Riley, our COO, Casey Riley, my direct boss, Brian Young, our HR director, Kristen Elaine, not to mention names. I don't think they listen to the show, but I'm just saying they are so pull versus push. Yeah. And they don't have to pontify that they are in charge. It is through their behaviors that you just want to be a better person.
Absolutely.
And I watch that. They're illustrating what great people they are. We're an ESOP company. We're employee owned. So this is like, it's that pull versus push leadership.
Yeah. And Gail, think about this. And I love that example. Imagine if we could create an environment that encourages that kind of leadership and nurtures it. And that's where the power of culture is so incredibly dramatic and powerful and far reaching. And the opposite can be true as well. We can create an environment that doesn't encourage that pulling type of leadership, that's command and control, you know, from the 50s and 60s, and it doesn't work anymore. But what I love about your approach, and just the very name of this program about, you know, leadership at all levels, is recognizing that everyone can be a leader. And when we can build a culture that reinforces that, I think of one example. I have a hospital client up in Massachusetts, and we were doing a team meeting that included everyone from physicians to maintenance and custodial staff. It was very clear in that meeting, just by a few comments that she made, that one of the housekeeping staff got it. Like, she understood what leadership was really all about and just made some very insightful comments. But I could also tell by the way those around her in those sessions were kind of like treating her and kind of respecting her authority. And here was someone, she didn't have the job title or the salary, but just demonstrated this incredible leadership in her own way. In fact, after the meeting, I made a point of walking by the president of the hospital's office. And I said, and I forget the woman's name, maybe it was Susan. I said, keep your eye on Susan. You know, she's someone that could really thrive and do, you know, so much within your organization. So that's the other part of leadership. It can happen. Like, we can all be leaders regardless of our title or position, which is what I love about your approach.
No, and now I'm thinking of a story too, and I'm going to give them a shout out. First of all, I love Marriott Corporation. It's no secret. When I speak at conferences, people will come out of the audience, how much is Marriott paying you?
Yeah.
And I'm
yeah.
like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry I'm talking about them so much. And have they always been perfect? No, I have plenty of examples, plenty. I don't get mad though if they're not perfect. You can only do so much. But I was speaking at a conference called PCMA, it's a Professional mm-hmm. Convention Management Association. And love that conference. And I lost my voice the morning I was speaking, and I didn't know I lost it, but it was in Austin, Texas. And I was staying at the Austin JW Marriott, JW Austin. Unbelievable. Everything there was unbelievable. They have great management. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I knew I lost it is my sister calls me every morning between 5 and 5:30. We talk every morning. One of my sisters and the other sister's 8 o'clock. So she called me and it was 4. It's an hour behind. She missed it. She didn't know where I was. So I'm like, I couldn't talk. So I have to text her. I think I have laryngitis. I can't have laryngitis. So now I have to wait because nothing's open downstairs. I actually walked down to the front desk and they said, oh, we've got, you know, a little sundries there that you could buy aspirin, but they didn't have lozenges or anything. So at 6, when the executive lounge opened, I went up and I wrote a note. I lost my voice. Do you have any hot water, lemon, honey? She makes me, the wonderful woman there, I have a picture with her, makes me this wonderful hot water lemon. You're not going to believe this. You're not. By the time I walked up to my room, in my room, there was a tray. It had hot water, lemon, honey, something else in the chef, a card from Maddie Rupp, the chef, that said, this is my grandmother's recipe. I forgot what the fourth ingredient was. Use it. Your speech will, you are going to get your voice back and your speech is going to be great. Well, it didn't work, but until, I mean, it was helping.
Yeah. Yeah.
But can you imagine? I came back up to that. I get on the stage to do my speech, and I actually had one of the friends in the audience. I said, you may have to just kind of, I don't know what we're going to do. I just might need your help with this. I got on, and in the exorcist voice of all exorcist voice, hello. Oh. For 1 hour, I had my voice. 1 hour. I stopped. I got off that darn stage, didn't have my voice anymore. And then the next day, when I flew home the next day, and I get home and I have my voice back, and my husband's like, oh, you have your voice back? Like, he wasn't excited. I think he was excited for me not to talk for one day. But that's just a little funny on that. Yeah. But can you imagine who does that? It had been refreshed that evening. Yeah. They refreshed it and brought it up.
Unbelievable. And Gail, I assure you that experience didn't happen by accident, right? That team member from Marriott who brought those supplies and had them in your room, right? That was part of the culture of that particular hotel. Another great example of that is, and we use this all the time, our approach was heavily influenced, and we give them full credit. In fact, they've been on our company podcast, the former leader of the Ritz-Carlton.
Oh, yes. You can't beat the Ritz.
You cannot beat the Ritz. And I'll use
And they're Marriott. They're Bonvoy now.
And they are owned by Marriott now.
Yeah.
And their the magic they provide when you stay there. The reason, you know, Boston Marriott tonight will likely be able to get $600 or $700 or $800 per room is because of the experience they deliver. And that doesn't happen by accident. It happens because they're very intentional about how they do what they do, what type of culture they're looking to build. And what they do, it's fascinating, is every day, every shift change, every team member gets in a huddle and they talk about one guest-centric idea per day. And it might be something simple, Gail, is if a guest asks you where the restroom is, we walk them there. We don't point to the third door on the left. And so therefore, when you go and step into a Ritz-Carlton, you know, that's the kind of experience, just as you experienced at that Marriott. And we're the same way with our clients. What our clients do is they define the behaviors they're looking to drive, and then every week they meet and discuss them over and over and over and over. So it just seeps into our DNA, becomes how we do what we do. But I assure you that that magical experience you encountered was not by accident. I mean, I assure you that was woven into their DNA through some sort of process and repetition, which is, how cool is that?
And it just makes me smile. And I will add one more thing that they did. That night by my nightstand were cough drops with a handwritten note from housekeeping. Hope you're feeling better. So how the heck did that happen?
Let me ask you this, Gail. How many times have you shared that experience or story
in
with others?
Every single customer service presentation I give.
What incredible marketing and advertising and promotion that is for that, right? So it goes back to, imagine if we can build a culture around that where we're offering those sorts of experiences every day, and how far reaching the impact of that is when we're creating those experiences for our team members, our employees, and our customers. That's the power. That's the power of this stuff.
And it doesn't have to be that big. Our intern, James Poopy, who's working with us, great kid. James took a picture. He was on a date with his girlfriend. And he took a picture the other night from our restaurant, Barcino, and said, this is over the top. Mm-hmm. And it was a birthday card signed by all the staff. Wow. How hard is it to grab some cards? It wasn't printed, by the way. It was real. Have everybody sign on their shift and leave it with a complimentary dessert.
Yeah.
How many people has he told that story to and shown that picture to?
Absolutely.
But I know Barcino's doing it with their heart. So as we close today, and I need more time with you. This always happens. How can we leave the show today? What's something we can do to be a better leader?
Yeah. I would say the one thing I would encourage to be a better leader is make sure you're taking care of yourself first. You know, I love the analogy of the oxygen mask on the airplane. I'd argue, and studies support this, that if we're not taking great care of ourselves first, we're not going to be able, we're just not physically, emotionally, or mentally going to be able to take the time and build and invest in the relationships with our team members. So as we go into this new year, I think that should be focus number one for all of us.
Al, that is going to be the intention that we set for 2024, to just put our own oxygen mask on first. Thank you so much, Al Curnow of CultureWise, for being with us here today. God bless you. Happy New Year. And Bruce, thank you. I will see you next year.
You bet.
Thank you both.
Your someday is now. What are you waiting for?